Welcome to the Source Refresh Small Business Supply Chain Podcast. I'm your host, Chandrika Venkatraman. Join me as I talk to small businesses from across the world to learn about their supply chains, their support systems, and what keeps them moving. Today, my guest on the Source Refresh Podcast is Will Nidze. Will is making waves in the world of nutrition and wellness with his company, IQ Bar. IQ Bar produces delicious and nutritious snack bars designed to enhance brain function and cognitive performance. Will, welcome to the Source Refresh Podcast. We're so excited to have you here. Will you share with us something from your startup story that is not already widely known?
Something that's not widely known. I mean, there's some basic, like, I have zero CPG experience and no one I know or I knew when I started had any experience. Here's one. I formulate everything. So I have most people like me at some point will hand off the R&D. I never did that. And no, I'm not a food scientist. I have no background in food science or even a culinary background, completely self-taught in a very painful, painstaking, iterative process over years. But that's what I'll go with.
That's super interesting. So, you know, you formulate everything. Wow, that's amazing. So last week I ended up ordering IQ Bar for the first time and it arrived like so quickly and it was packaged really beautifully and it tasted amazing. I know that you guys use 3PLs in your business. Just explain to me a little bit about what a 3PL is and how they have helped your business.
Sure. We actually don't use 3PLs. Well, we do. So here's our setup. We have used 3PLs in the past and I've hired and fired, I think, 4 3PLs at this point. So actually now we do a combination. So we manage our own warehouse, we lease our own space, and we have people, three W-2s who work in it, and all they do all day, every day is kit and fulfill our products. We also use, I guess it would be a 3PL. I think they call themselves a redistributor. It's kind of like a Dot Foods, but not Dot Foods, if you're familiar with them. But we ship them inventory, and then they fulfill orders for Walmart and Kroger and things like that. So it's kind of a hybrid approach. We do all our pick and pack for parcel shipments that come in through direct-to-consumer channels. And then for bigger orders, we use a redistributor. And then what was the second part? What's my experience been with them?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, 3PLs, if you talk to anyone who makes any tangible product and fulfills it, 3PLs are a headache. Like, they just are. When you're shipping hundreds of or thousands of things, stuff goes wrong. And it's not even like a if, it's a when and how. And one of the challenges I think a lot of people have with 3PLs is the lack of, well, there's a couple of challenges. So for one, oftentimes you have to be forced into their mold, meaning software, way of fulfilling. You have to ship on their carrier account codes on which is their rate cards. There's not a ton of rate transparency. You don't know where they're marking things up or how often. So you're fitting into their mold, not vice versa. There's always markups throughout. So that's just inherently not great. And then at the end, you know, at the end of the day, you get your bill. Auditing a 3PL bill is like a journey. You know, am I getting charged what I thought I would? Is the rate right? Did we actually ship this many packages? Did they optimize each package for the least cost way of fulfilling it? Like, there's so much work in just auditing how you get billed. And invariably there are cases where you get overbilled or mistakes or inefficiencies. So it's a highly, highly frictional relationship. And I think everyone will tell you that, everyone in CPG.
So what is the alternate to a 3PL?
I mean, you can do what we do. You can fulfill your own stuff, which a lot of people will tell you is not smart. I think it is smart. I've seen both sides of the coin. I think it just depends on how you want to tool it up. Like, there are pros and cons to either setup. You know, I listed all the cons of a 3PL. The pros are you don't have to hire all these people. It's not your space. You don't have to lease the space or own the space. It's more scalable in some ways. Those are all pros. The cons, I would argue, are far greater, right? So let's say, like, just like stuff goes wrong in 3PLs, stuff goes wrong, period, throughout your business, and you need to get something out the door tomorrow, or you need an emergency kitting project to kit 500 variety packs, like, in short order or whatever. And when you're just one of 200 clients at a 3PL, like, they're not going to do that for you. They need a lead time. And so the dynamism and flexibility and speed of a 3PL is way worse, way worse. And unfortunately for that setup, speed is like everything in startups. So that was why I was always exasperated with having a 3PL, because it was like, oh crap, I need this to happen, and there's just no way this partner's going to do this. You know, again, it's preference. It's preference. I think you can do it both ways. It comes down to, like, I think it also comes down to what kind of a thing are you selling? Like, do you sell a lot of variety packs that require a lot of kitting? Like, if you, let's say you're like Athletic Greens or someone, you have one SKU and you're like 99% of the ways you fulfill it are this way and it's not going to change. Well, great. Go use a 3PL. As you add complexity, 3PLs get worse relative to the DIY model. So I think a lot of it just depends on, you know, what SKUs do you have? What's the SKU mix in terms of volume? How much customization do you have? Are you doing limited time offers? Are you not? You know, look at your own fulfillment needs and SKU setup and act accordingly.
So do 3PLs make sense at the start of somebody's journey?
I would say the same thing. Maybe not. You know, like, depends on. I'll say this. It's an easier path in some ways because it's just there. Like, you can plug into it. So in that sense, yes. Like, you can say, hey, what's your rate card? Here's what I sell. Here's how I want to ship it. Can you help? And then they'll say yes. And then you can plug in quicker. Whereas if you want to set up your own space, you have to go find the space, and then you have to go hire the people, and then you have to train the people. And then, you know, it's just a more, the upfront lift is bigger. So, I mean, the way we did it was we found a 3PL, learned all the things we didn't like about 3PLs, then used that to make the best setup we could for ourselves. So I'm partial to that. I like that. If I were to do this a second time around, I wouldn't need that first step of the 3PL.
Sure.
I also like shipping on our own shipping codes. I like managing our own inventory, our own shipping automation software. I like controlling more, not less. Some people like controlling less and they're okay offloading. That's, to a degree, that's like a personality thing and like a preference thing. So again, it just comes down to, what is your setup and what do you want your fulfillment setup to be?
You know, talk to me a little bit about, you know, your learnings for the benefit of somebody who's listening, right, who doesn't have an option, who has to use a 3PL. How did you guys handle, you know, communication, collaboration in a way that actually was, you know, efficient? I know you've said, yeah, we had a lot of cons working with the 3PL providers. But how does somebody, if they don't have a choice, what should they do?
Deal with it. Because it's not going away. I mean, you can establish a good rapport. You can say, first of all, just understand what lead times are. Tell, like, be really upfront. Say, hey, we need this done. What's the absolute quickest like way we could do it, or how do we shorten this lead time? What do you need from me to shorten the lead time? You know, it's sort of like no-brainer stuff maybe, but just being like over-communicating and over-expressing things and saying, hey, this doesn't work for us. How do we get to a procedure that does work for us? You know, that's kind of like the same principles you would apply to any partnership, ad agency, manufacturing partner, whatever. But the same principles apply of like over-communicate, understand what constraints are and bottlenecks are, and then plan around them. It's no different than any third party model. But I opened up with like just deal with it. You can't get around certain constraints. You can't get around the fact that you're small and they have bigger customers, or you're one of 30 customers, and that's not going away. So, you know, you can do a lot, but you can only do so much.
So let's shift gears a little bit and move into sustainable sourcing. Your brand obviously is known for ethical sourcing, sustainability, transparency in the supply chain. Why is that important for your business?
Yes, you want to source like fair trade stuff where you can, and you want to source things closer to the point of you using that input to manufacture into a new input and or a new finished good. You want to do all of those things for a variety of reasons. You know, for example, that last thing I mentioned, like you don't want to put things on planes and trucks or in trains if you don't have to, and you want all those trips to be shorter. That's better for everyone, the environment, et cetera. It's also cheaper. So you also want to save money. The reality, this is probably an unpopular opinion, but it is my actual opinion, which is I don't believe startups are responsible for making supply chains as environmentally or ethically optimal as possible. They just don't have the leverage. They don't have the buying power. They don't have the leverage. They don't have the balance sheet. They don't have the unit economics. They don't have actually really anything that would even enable them to make any sort of dent whatsoever, right? The Pepsis, the Mondelezes, the Post Foods, the Kellogg's, it's like a drop in the ocean, right? The relativity there. And so I think like you're not going to do anyone a favor if you're out of business is the reality. And you probably will go out of business just looking at the numbers. So I always thought it was a bit of a dog and pony show, like the people, you know, who are a startup and they're like, we give 1% for the planet. It's like you don't make any profit. How could you're going to give 1% of a negative number? And it's like a marketing thing. And so I always am highly dubious of all of that stuff for a brand that's doing sub $20 million. Like you're trying to survive, period. And that's my personal opinion. All of that said, what's usually good for like the environment is good for business, is good for pricing and unit economics and cost structure and all that. So that's a good thing, right? Like more efficiency means less cost, means better supply chain, means more environmental friendliness. But there's a good post on this where someone was saying like, it was like mission versus margin, I think was the line. And it's like you have to choose like, oh, do I use this sort of packaging versus that? Like it has this impact on the margin, but my mission is this. Again, probably an unpopular opinion. I think you have to focus on surviving and margin and getting to a certain critical mass such that you can even make a meaningful impact.
So I think you might probably be the first person to say it as it is. And I appreciate that viewpoint because it is true, right? That can a small business actually make much of an impact? But at the same time, we do see small businesses that are, that do focus on sustainable sourcing, that do focus on ethical sourcing, possibly at higher cost to their business. So, you know, do you guys actually track and measure sustainability, transparency in the supply chain at all?
No.
Okay.
I could lie to you and say we do.
No. No, that's fair. Is that in your plan at all?
No. Our plan is to get to be a standalone sustainable business, period. And then at that point, look at everything. It's like we have a 6-person business of people who work like 10, 12, 14 hours a day, 5 to 6 days a week, sometimes 7 for me. And we barely, like, it's hard to overstate how hard it is just to make stuff and get stuff out the door, get stuff to the end destination, there in one piece, turn a profit. Like, it's so insanely hard to just exist that, you know, I think let's fast forward a year down the road or 2 years down the road. Maybe we get acquired, maybe we don't, but we've grown a lot and we've hired more people. And now we're like, okay, whew, we can like breathe. What is our environmental impact? What does our supply chain look like? Can we make it more sustainable, et cetera? And then we can twist a bunch of dials, which, by the way, will have a bigger net impact because we will be bigger. We'll make more stuff. We'll buy more stuff. We'll put more stuff on trains. We'll put in planes and trucks, right? But if we don't get to that point, we're useless. We've helped no one. So that's kind of how I think about it.
I think that's definitely a very refreshing perspective and a very practical perspective, right? Because, yeah, to your point, who are you going to help if you're not in business anymore? So in general, right, with your business, how you guys have grown, what opportunities have you seen or do you consistently see in operations, supply chain management, procurement, you know, from your experience? What have you seen?
Yeah, I think I obsess over this stuff probably too much. I don't think most people do. I think, like, let's say you want to make a cookie. You're like, most people or brands will go to the manufacturer and they say, hey, I want to make a cookie. And then the manufacturer says, great. Here's all, like, our, you know, what goes into a cookie? Flour, eggs, butter, whatever. And here are our preferred suppliers for all those things. We already buy all those things in volume. We'd highly prefer for you to use those. And by the way, we get a volume discount. So even though you're small, you're going to get a good price there, yada, yada, yada. And so you kind of, instead of you creating a product and then having the manufacturer map to your process, the opposite happens. You kind of map to the manufacturer's setup. And that's fine. Like, that's in some ways better when you start, because you just want to make something and get up to a certain volume. But at some point, you have enough volume where, you know, you have to make a decision. Basically, there's like the two classic paths. You do a turnkey setup, meaning the manufacturer is controlling everything. They're buying all the stuff at certain price points. They're housing all the ingredients. It used to be that just-in-time was the model. That's no longer really the case for most brands like us because of COVID and supply chains blowing up and blah, blah, blah. There were so many cases where, you know, you literally couldn't get something to where everyone kind of shifted and started buying multiple production runs worth of stuff because, like, the worst thing ever is you can't make product. That's far worse than you have to carry more ingredients on your balance sheet or you have to outlay more cash. Like, that's not great, but that's much better than not being able to produce. So anyway, so, you know, you have a turnkey model. The manufacturer is taking care of all that. Generally speaking, there's a materials management fee of, you know, percentage of, we'll tack on 2.5-3%, whatever, one if it's low, let's say. And that's a model. And then there's like a high, and then sometimes it's just like almost all stuff they already buy. Sometimes you can do that model, but you tell them, hey, carry all this stuff that I used in formulating my products. And now you start carrying that, but moving forward, you're going to do it in a turnkey way. That's like, let's say a hybrid. And then there's just the full brand owned supply chain path, meaning you internally buy all the stuff, send it to the co-packer, you own it, it's on your balance sheet. And then they make product with your stuff. And all three of those models can work and have worked for many brands. So again, it's kind of like the 3PL / owning your own warehouse dichotomy. How do you want to run it? There are pluses and minuses for both, just like with fulfillment. So we've done both. We've done all three. We've done the full turnkey, the hybrid, and then now we own our own supply chain. I will say, by owning your own supply chain, there are a lot of perverse incentives with turnkey, right? Because let's say the manufacturer has zero incentive to get better pricing. And in fact, they have an incentive for the pricing to be higher because they're making a markup percentage on that number. So they're actually incentivized for you to spend more money because they make more. So that's not great. And the markets have moved so much for commodities. They've been so volatile. And what happens generally with ingredient suppliers is they will pass on price increases, but not pass on decreases, or what should be decreases given the global supply chains and spot pricing. So if you own your supply chain and you're really diligent about that, you can keep on them and get decreases and all that. But if it's turnkey, that is just not going to happen, period. Like, why would it? There's no incentive for that to happen. So I like owning the supply chain. By the way, you save the materials management fees. And there's also just been so many cases where, like, we needed an ingredient. We needed it in 2 days. The reality is the random person in the purchasing office at your manufacturer is not going to stay up till 9 p.m. like brainstorming creative ways to get that thing there. Like, they don't care. What, it's no skin off their back because they don't have a brand. They're not part of your brand. And so, like, zero creative solutions in that scenario ever occur. I know because I've been there many times. So, you're just gonna work harder and be more creative and get the answer, like, period. So, and that happens enough where it's like, even in a turnkey model, you're going to have to inject yourself into the process a lot. So if you're already doing that, it's like, should we just be managing this? Again, it's a lot of work. Don't get me wrong. And we're still figuring out what's the best way to do it and manage it. But right now, that's my opinion, is that's, like, for us, the best way to do it. Now, same deal with, like, the Athletic Greens thing. Let's say you have that's not a good example because they have a lot of inputs, but let's say you're Chomps, right? Or you're like jerky, and like, there's a couple inputs. It's a simple product. Like, well, great. You know, that's way easier to hand off as turnkey because it's a couple inputs. So I think you just have to, like, recognize, who are we as a company? What are our inputs? How complex is our supply chain? And make the right decision for you.
So what solutions do you guys use for inventory management, coordination, and all of that?
We're kind of between sort of systems. Like, we have inventory systems at, like, that redistributor we use. We have inventory co-packer we use at our own warehouse. I forget the name of the software we use, but we use a software to track it. It's a bit of a Frankenstein of softwares, to be completely honest with you, which I think is, like, the same with everything in startups. Like, you're going to have a Frankenstein of apps for your website, and you're going to have a Frankenstein of inventory systems. But that's something we have to get really good on. I mean, demand planning is, like, the hardest part of consumer goods startups, period.
I'm glad you mentioned that. So how do you guys manage your demand planning? Excel forecasting, or do you
we have an Excel model. It's very, very, very hard to automate. Like, you can't just, like, apply, like, a 10 you know 5, 10% month over month growth. It just doesn't work. It actually is relatively automatable on the e-commerce side. The line is more linear of growth. But in brick and mortar, it's just wildly chunky. Like, it's like pipe fill here, massive uptick, you know, promotion here, massive uptick, et cetera. So it's very events driven. If you're growing, you know, if you're pulling in new doors and new accounts. So we have a meeting, like a monthly meeting, where Jess, who runs our online business, and then Ryan, who runs our brick and mortar business, and then Grant, who runs our ops and finance, all meet and go through everything. Like, I think it's once a month. It might even be bi-monthly or semi-monthly. And because it shifts, it's like, okay, are we still feeling this is the case? No, it's not the case. The pipe fill got pushed a month. Okay, like adjust. It's just gonna have to be manual in that way. So you have your like calendar, but you just know that you're gonna have to manually adjust it on a monthly or even like, I'm sure big brands do this on a weekly basis. But also this has to do with like things like shelf life, right? Like, so let's say you have a 3-month shelf life product. Well, you got to do this like maybe like daily or certainly weekly. You know, we make a product with a 12-month shelf life and another product with a 24-month shelf life. So we have the ability, the semi-luxury, shall I say, to overproduce and then clean up misses on the back end. So it's not the end of the world if we sell something in a month or in 2 months that we thought we would sell in a month. So that's nice. I mean, I don't think I would ever go into a business with less than a shelf life of 12 months. Like, just knowing how hard it is with 12 months, I'm sure you have to be really good if you're 6 months or less.
I'm with you. I think spices and coffee are great, great businesses to be in.
Yep.
So we're going to wrap up. What do you have planned for 2023 that's got you super pumped up?
Oh, a lot of growth. I mean, we're trying to double the business. We're launching a coffee product, which will be fun, called IQ Joe. And that'll be an instant coffee product. And what else? Rolling out into Costco, LA region, which is a big one for us. In a couple of weeks, we're doing a Sam's Club rotation. Trying to get BJ's. We'll see on that one. We just rolled out with HEB. Trying to get Publix. There's a lot going on. We're, like I said, we're just trying to like hold on to our horses here. So it's just chaos, but good, you know, good growth related chaos.
Good problems to have. Fantastic. Thank you so much, Will. Thank you for chatting with me today. All the best for 2023.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. You can get more information on today's episode in the show notes or at source-refresh.com/podcast. To hear more episodes, please subscribe to the Source Refresh Small Business Supply Chain Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts from.